Welcome to the Roy Harper Podcast. This is episode 4 for December 2007. My name's Paul Davison and I run the website stormcop.net. In this episode, some more reviews of the recent Stormcop reissue, the continuation of the interview with Pete Herring and Steve Lambert from Australia, the A to Z of Harper, this time we're concentrating on the letter D, some listener feedback, and a selection of music. So first of all, the news. This is really concentrated on the Stormcop reissue, which was a big event, really, for most Roy Harper fans. And there was a couple of reviews in the press that are particularly noteworthy. First of all, it was the reissue of the week in the Sunday Times recently. And they say, depending on your viewpoint, Stormcock is either Roy Harper's masterpiece or his biggest disaster. Perhaps both. Masterpiece because it's the fullest realisation of his unique take on folk, the album on which he let himself go. Disaster because, well, it's the album on which he let himself go. The four deep, lengthy tracks were precisely what was not required at the moment in 1971, when Led Zepp's patronage had piqued the interest of a wider audience in Harper's work. With a simple musical statement, he could have been a big player. Instead, he remains a cult figure, and Stormcock, stunning Jimmy Page guitar work and all, remains a grower. Lines such as "Welcome home, oh Johnny Soldier, we treat you here just like they treat you there" are, sadly, still relevant. Okay, pretty decent review. I, of course, do not agree at all with the sentiment that he should have gone for the pop song approach, but there you go. And the other one I want to read out is from the Mojo magazine. They've confused him with Billy Bragg, I think. The title is "Barking Bard's 1971 Masterpiece Remasters and Remastered and Recredited." And it says, "And there on the credits is confirmation of rock's worst kept secret. Lead guitar on track 2, the same old rock, long credited to S. Flavius Mercurius, is actually Jimmy Page, finally appearing under his own name. There's more to Stormcock than Page's great lost acoustic solo, though. Most startling is how fresh and pungent it still sounds. The major themes, mass religion is a dangerous sop, war is wrong, earth is screwed, are still relevant. Harper's argument's remarkably in tune with modern times. The remastering also means his grandly ambitious folk music, augmented with moog and swelling strings, rings with a clarity and vibrancy seldom glimpsed before, particularly on that solo. A masterclass in how to curate back catalogue and a well-deserved spit and polish for an old master." Well, that's a pretty decent review as well. One thing that a lot of people have said, though, is that Page's solo is a little bit subdued on the remaster, as I think I said in the last podcast as well. So it's interesting that Mojo think it's a bit clearer. Maybe I need to put some Earex in my ears again, who knows. In general, the fan community's reaction to the reissue has been extremely positive. I think I can think of nobody that's received the reissue that hasn't been extremely happy with it. There's only one other little bit of news that I can come up with, which is an email from Gordon Taylor to the Stormcock mailing list. Let us know that the January issue of the Uncut magazine in the UK has got a giveaway CD called Give Peace a Chance, 15 anti-war and protest classics, containing a whole assortment of songs, but including I Hate the White Man by Roy Harper, also Richard Thompson's Dad's Gonna Kill Me, Robert Wyatt's Beautiful War, and Eric Bogle's original version of band played Waltzing Matilda. I can't think of ever having heard of White Man being given away on a CD before, so, you know, fair play to them, and who knows what that will lead to. If you've come here as a result of investigating Roy Harper off that magazine, I'd love to hear about it. Okay, time for some music now, and I've decided to pick some pretty weird tracks for this podcast. I've done some sort of the Roy standards up to now, and I like to make a list of things that I'll play, and I wanted to come up with some kind of wintry theme as well, which I'll cover a bit later on. But the first one is Short and Sweet, which is one of my favourite tracks, but this is a version that was originally on the Unhinged release. Now, Unhinged is a live album on CD, although actually you can't currently get it on CD either. Hopefully that will be remastered soon. But that album originally came out on a limited edition cassette. I have number 70. It's all been handwritten and everything. And that cassette included a fantastic version of Short and Sweet with Roy and Nick playing, which didn't make it over to the CD, hopefully for length reasons. Hopefully it wasn't due to copyright reasons. If so, then I'm in trouble as well. But anyway, moving swiftly on, this is Short and Sweet.
This is a song, a favourite of mine. And we the immoral men, we dare. Naked and fearless in the elements, we're free, well. Carefree from tempting fates, maybe. Aware. Well. And, yeah. And holding off Edwina's moral nightmare at the gates as often as we can.
Yeah. short as from you to me, as close as we all hope to try to help it be. We're caught watching the dark in the skies. Who knows? Helpless as time itself to hold time and day. And sweet, sweet as a mountain stream, holds towards a new day breaking in the east. We'll meet as every future dream unfolds, and surely quality it is that very deep.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. I certainly did listening to it back through the headphones again. Right, moving swiftly on. Part two of my interview with Pete Herring and Steve Lambert. This is the second of two parts, so we'll have a new interviewee next month. But the interview we had was so much fun, we had too much for just one podcast. So this is part two. If you missed part one, I suggest you stop now and go back and immediately listen to episode three to get the context. I left the interview last time with them describing how they'd visited St. Peter's Brewery on their way across to Clonakilty, and let's take it on from there.
Apart from a slight diversion to St. Peter's Brewery in Suffolk, that was only a side issue at the time. And Ryan here weren't impressed with the 2 cartons of beer we were trying to get into Ireland either. But we enjoyed those.
Yeah, that worked. It worked a treat. The beer in Ireland has got to be improved somehow, I feel.
Well, apparently you can get decent beer if you look around enough for it.
But, oh, yeah. You know. I found it now on my last trip. I know where to get it.
Okay.
But we actually discovered the brew pub in Kinsale.
Yeah.
I think Steve mentioned that.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, very nice. They do a stout that's much, much better than Guinness or Murphy's. Very nice. Anyway, we were talking about how we originally set up the idea of getting there.
Yeah.
Pretty much covers it, I think.
Yeah. I'd been before. In 1999, I took some long service leave from here and took 3 months off and went to see the old folks back in the southeast London. And I took a week and a half in Ireland just to have a look around the place. And I was impressed, of course. And when this opportunity came up, I thought, we can't miss out on this. And, of course, I hadn't seen Nick.
Oh, right.
So I hadn't seen him. And quite frankly, the best bit about Roy is Nick, frankly. I mean, he's going to carry it on. He blew me away. It was totally a different experience. I imagine Nick to be very quiet and reserved and a beautiful player.
He was in the early days.
That was the way it came across on recordings, and not ever having experienced the Nick experience, as it were. I thought, this would be great. Yeah. We all sit there quietly sipping our Chardonnay. This guy is going to play this beautiful melodic guitar. And when he ripped into it, I thought, this is amazing. Yeah. So there you are. And it'll be another reason to go back again, I'm sure. And I'm hoping the Everest thing is going well too.
Talking of Nick, just as a brief aside, yes, at the time of recording this, the Everest thing's been going fantastically. And they've done their gig from the highest part of the mountain. I'm hoping that I'll do a Nick Harper special in the next month or two.
That'd be great.
Just, really, for Roy fans that haven't heard Nick particularly or, a chance to sort of focus in on him. It's funny what you said about him initially being quiet, though. I mean, I first saw him supporting Roy and doing, a bit of backing, and I thought, well, yeah, great guitarist, And then one gig, I think he did Guitar Man on his own. And he was as nervous as hell, you could tell, But he pulled it off amazingly. Oh. And it just went on and on from there. And the guy is dripping with talent, basically.
Oh, look, I had a long chat with him at the gathering then. And turns out that he bought that Loudon guitar from Ivan Moran's Music Centre. And my father used to manage it in the 70s.
Right.
And I was quizzing him about the tuning heads and the way it all worked. How the hell, where was it built? Who did it? He said, I just changed this machine head myself and I get this strange banjo effect and I can do all sorts of tune. It was amazing to talk to the guy. Yeah, it was an eye-opener for me also.
Mm. Well, it's not to belittle what Matt Churchill does with Roy as well, because Matt's got a slightly different approach.
Matt's a fine player.
He's got a more...
And with one, that's right, one finger short this year as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's got more of a sort of, I don't know, is pastoral the right word? I don't know. The style's
maybe,
different.
Yeah.
Different but equally satisfying, maybe.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
So what can you tell us about your trip in 2006? What anecdotes do you want to tell us? Or what struck you the most about it? What did you take home from the trip? Apart from the memory of keeping your beer in the stream.
That was hilarious.
That was hilarious.
For me, having, as I said before, felt as though I'd pretty much done Ireland and I was over it in a way, I thought, I don't really need to go back to Ireland again. Mm. And it still remains for me the only place in Ireland that I've not seen is Donegal.
Oh, right.
However, having seen places like Newgrange, which is one of the highlights of all the travelling I've ever done, I went back to West Cork and discovered a gem of a place. I think West Cork has got to be Ireland's best kept secret. There's all these beautiful little towns like, well, Clonakilty itself, is a lovely place.
Yeah.
Kinsale and other really little places like Court McSherry, Union Hall, Glendore. And Steve and I went up past Baltimore onto the hill up there where the lighthouse is, just off, opposite Shirkin Island. What a superb spot. All these beautiful little villages along the coast.
Castle Townsend, the other little spot.
Castle Townsend, lovely little spot.
Yeah,
we went there.
Yeah, lovely, lovely spots. Excellent.
So travelling around, apart from the gigs, travelling around was just fantastic. And of the gigs itself, as Steve has talked about Roy's fingerstyle guitar, I'm just enthralled watching Roy play. Mm. He could just sit there playing fingerstyle guitar all night and have it at that and talk. I'd be happy if he just talked. Kotke does that thing as well. He talks a lot, and it gets to the point where people are saying, come on, play something. But I mean, I could listen to people talk all night. Wouldn't bother me at all. But just the atmosphere of De Barra's was brilliant.
Mm.
Your typical Irish pub, and you could travel the world and go to every imitation crap Irish pub in the world.
But that's the real deal, isn't it?
Never get atmosphere anyway near that.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And the staff were great. And the young blonde fellow with curly hair behind the bar that I saw every night and then found out who he was later on.
Yeah.
Gavin. We ended up catching up with him here on St. Patrick's Day last in Sydney.
Oh, of course, yes. That's right. He came over, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Played a set on Paddy's Day. Under extreme pressure, I think he was that day, and did really, really well.
Mm.
Had a couple of people sitting in with him. Nice version of Highway Blues.
And while I think of it,
there's a song. Highway Blues, when I first heard that song, I thought, this is a song that I'm going to forget about fairly soon. But, you know, I've now got 6 or 7 versions of Highway Blues, and I love it. Great, great number.
It does grow on you.
But anyway, back to Clonakilty.
Well, for 2006, you know, Nick for me was the revelation, but I guess the gathering was also fun, you know, meeting other Harperites, and that was great to find out just who made the effort to go over there and why they were there and the stories they had. It was great having a chat. And the hours or two, the 2 or 3 hours wait, just supping away on a Murphy's, just talking to people while you waited again. It was totally different. You know, queuing up outside some cold venue in the dark and just waiting to go in. We just sit there quietly having a drink and casually you wander in when you're allowed to. I mean, that was just a totally different experience.
Well, the gathering is just for people that haven't been. The gathering is like a social event that has been sort of set up around the gigs, and it's basically a bunch of fans or friends really getting together and having a chat, and with Roy there as well, but not in a kind of worshipful way particularly. It's just friends, you know. And I wasn't sure how that was going to work out the first year that Tracy set it up, but I immediately realised, you know, you've got so much in common with people that like the same kind of music, and it really does bring people together. And I found, you know, there are a lot of lovely people and a lot of really interesting conversations, and that's one.
I agree. It was fantastic. You know, it was worth all the agonising hours on the 747 to get over there.
Yeah.
And the mere whiff of Roy coming to New Zealand and Australia this year, supposedly, was a great excitement, but unfortunately didn't come about. But I'm working on him.
I
keep asking him every time I see him. You're coming down. Oh, and he did shake my hand and he said, I'll see you down there.
Yeah.
So it's still it's sort of hanging off the edge of the table now.
Oh, well, if he does do that, maybe that'll be the impetus for me to get off my arse and come down there as well.
We'd love to see you down here.
Yeah.
We'd love to see you down here.
So that was 2006. In 2007, Steve and I ended up staying at the same B&B.
We did.
But Pete didn't make it over. I mean, did you do it again, Steve, partly because of the potential lack of gigs in the future, or did you just fancy doing it again?
No. The potential last one was working on me for some time. I'd looked at it and I felt extremely selfish having to go back and ask the other half if I could go yet again.
Yeah.
But as time drew nearer and nearer, I thought, I just have to do it. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to fund this thing so that it's as if I just disappeared for a fortnight and came back and nothing, and there wasn't a blink on the account.
Oh, right.
So I delved into the under the stairs stash of guitars and plucked a few out that I could afford to be without, and basically flogged those off to fund the trip. I don't regret that at all. So I said to Michelle, I said, look, if I can fund this thing and it doesn't affect the family accounts, can I go? And
yeah.
Oh, well, you know, yeah, okay, you can go. How are you going to do it was the question. How are you going to fund this thing? I said, well, you know, I can do it. So I just made a few guitars disappear and would have done it again any day. It was a tremendous experience. It was good to catch up with Maeve back at the B&B. You're wandering there as if you're, you know, part of the family.
Yeah.
And, yeah, always get that little extra slice of black pudding in the morning.
Black pudding.
Pete was probably more annoyed that he wasn't going to get any black pudding. Than...
No black pudding in
there. Yeah, and you have to be careful about exporting it as well, I think. Cause it,
well, you can't. Yeah. I went in there and we asked a bit. No, it doesn't travel well, apparently, no. Anyways, I'll be waiting a long time before I experience it again, I'm sure, but we'll see what we can do.
I'm really, you know, amazed that I'm impressed that you went to the length of selling your guitars and stuff to make it over there. But
But I also had, obviously, friends in the UK that kept the accommodation cost down.
Oh, sure.
And I also actually took the opportunity to take my mother, who's 77, my father passed away, and she wanted to meet up with all her old friends who were now retired down on the south coast, down at Bex Hill.
Oh, yeah.
So I actually chaperoned her across on the flight and left her with her friends in Bex Hill so she could meet up with some of her old relatives and friends down there while I was off watching Roy. So it sort of worked out for her as well, and she funded her side of it, and I borrowed a bit of money off Mum, to be quite honest with you, a few dollars for beers and things, but you know, she enjoyed it, and I got to make the trip, so it was great.
Brilliant stuff. So I mean, closing up on the Clonakilty stuff, we don't know if there's going to be another one.
No.
I'm kind of hoping that after a year or two off and maybe a new album, he'll do it again, but I've got no idea at all. I suppose the obvious question is, if it happens again, will we see you there?
I'll do what I can,
and I'll certainly do what I can. I'm running out of guitars, Paul, but anyway, actually, they're actually blossoming in value, so maybe if it's long enough, who knows, inflation might fall, but then we don't know what the flights are going to be either.
Who knows?
Who knows what they're doing, but I'd do it any day if I could possibly afford it. And time's not an issue, it's basically funding it.
Sure.
Well, seeing Roy is addictive.
It is. Tell me about it.
Mary and I were over there. I think I remember telling you, Paul, Mary and I were over there for the 2005 tour. We saw him in High Wycombe.
That's right.
And also the last one down in Brighton and in Reading.
Mm.
So we saw three gigs on that tour. Really good.
Well, you know, as I said in the interview with Steve a couple of months ago, when we used to go to multiple nights at the Bloomsbury Theatre in London or the Half Moon Putney or whatever, it'd be a different set every night. It'd be a completely different gig, and I, you know, wouldn't have missed it for the world. And it is addictive, as you say.
It is addictive. I mean, as I just mentioned before, I'd just received the BBC tape set, and that's my era, the Andy Roberts era my era. I think I went to London School of Economics once, where, you know, they spend at least 20 minutes chatting and having a smoke before they start, and it was wonderful days. And who could forget that the South was at the 74 St Valentine's Day the Rainbow, and I was crying through the first half of it because the noise and the amount of Who fans and Led Zepp fans were shouting out and drowning out this orchestra. I said, why don't they shut up for 5 minutes? You know, you could never forget those gigs. What other ones was there? Oh, there was a heap of them. But
tell us a bit more about the Rainbow gig, if you can think of anything else, because I'm really fascinated by that. You're the first person I've spoken to that's actually been to it.
Well, I mean, I can't remember whether it was advertised that there'd be the famous players with him on the night, or whether it got just slipped out and got out, you know. But I would say that over half the audience were Who or Zepp fans,
yeah.
You know, and they were all in there in force, just waiting for them to come on stage. And Roy had set up this lovely orchestra to do the first half, and they just wouldn't shut up.
Oh, right.
There was heckling and shouting and all sorts of carry on, you know. And what was nice about it, I remember vividly, you'd go in and on the seat would be a little badge. You'd have your Roy Harper St. Valentine's Day Massacre badge, mm-hmm. and a free program. There was a little program there with thoughts and lyrics and things. Yeah, still got it. I've got some chords penciled out in it too that I worked out in. So I've still got that. I might do a digital photograph for you. So
love to see it.
I don't know what's happened to my badge. But, used to wear the badge with pride.
I might try and deal with it.
I've actually, funnily enough, this last fortnight, I was up there looking. I've still got a lot of the ticket stubs. Those that were perforated, you can keep half of the stuff. Still got all the ticket stubs there. Kept them neatly filed away. There was a gig in a church in Hammersmith and Broadway, I remember. It was an amazing gig. The sound system, I doubt if it was quadraphonic, but the church gave an effect that the sound came out and the normal echo that happens when Roy reaches those higher notes, which just echo from the front to the rear, and then about 10 seconds later, it'll come thundering back the other way. It was like bouncing off the back wall of the church, and you sort of get this rolling effect as if you were being tumbled by this wave. Mm. You'd get rolled one way and then rolled the other way. It was an amazing gig. But I guess a lot of it is that you never knew what you were going to get. When you turned up to a Harper gig, you didn't really know what was going to happen, how many songs you were going to get, how long you'd talk for, how long the guitar would stay in tune, the tunings and all that. Although I must say, the Andy Roberts period was his Ovation period.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the Ovation guitars, and I hated those guitars sound-wise, but they did actually stay in tune longer than most of the other wooden ones, for one reason or another.
I remember he used the Ovation a lot when he was with Jimmy Page. I didn't see him on stage before then, but I mean, he had the Adamus, or however it's pronounced. And
all that stuff, all the beautiful carvings on it, and the holes drilled in it. Yeah, that's right. I thought they were terrible guitars, but these guys know what they were doing. They were amplified properly and conditioned properly, I suppose. Mm. But as an acoustic instrument, the bass like a bee's fart, really. But, anyhow, and some of that actually comes out on the tape. Some of the stuff with Andy Roberts, you can hear the bass of it sort of bzzz, it's hardly a bottom end to it. However, it stays in tune, which is great.
Good for the stage, not necessarily for the record.
That's right. And hardly any feedback, of course.
Mm. Last podcast, I talked to Nick Lane a bit about the music industry, and at that time the Radiohead self-published album was just making the news, and I ended up buying a copy of that just really because I felt I should, just to sort of show support, but it's actually a very good album. I was wondering if you two had sort of any view to where the music business is going and how we can encourage creativity and get the word out there for people that don't have a massive record company behind them, because it seems to me it's complete lottery. If you're like a boy band, maybe you can get the promotion, but there must be a million and one singer-songwriter type people out there who are almost unheard of. I mean, you've got things like MySpace and social networks like that where the word tends to get out, but I mean, do you think there is a future for record labels, or do you think we're going to do something else?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think that the web obviously will still be an ongoing source of music, particularly for artists to sell their work directly. And I'm way into that concept. There's nothing I like more than thinking that my $30 or my 12 quid or whatever it happens to be is going to go to the artist rather than to some company that's going to skim off 60% or 70%+
right,
and then give a remainder to a performer or a band. So I particularly enjoy being able to buy Roy's material, and people at Richard Thompson who've got good website setups, you can buy the stuff directly from them. I think it's a really good thing, and it gives them the flexibility also. Like, Thompson's put out so much stuff over the last 5 years on his own website, it's just extraordinary. And I think that sort of thing will continue. But I think in terms of what's going to happen to the wider media, I think it's probably certain that gadgetry is going to rule the whole situation.
Right.
There's going to be more essential gadgets that you're going to have to buy in order to access the music that you want to hear. which in a way is going to be a shame. I suppose I've resisted the iPod thing, and I don't know how long I will continue to resist the iPod thing. And I've still got a substantial collection of vinyl at home, and I updated the turntable and speakers fairly recently. So I still use that and still will continue to, and still collect vinyl quite avidly.
Yeah.
So there's a low number of people who do what I do. However, for the future, I'm still probably going to remain in touch with that, because there's still stuff coming out that I selectively buy. There's a singer-songwriter in this country called Iota who's doing some interesting stuff. He also happens to be a big fan of Royce. And the future of the business, I think the present record companies, or the entities that are present record companies, will probably end up finding more innovative ways of making money from the buyers. And I think it's going to be very interesting to watch that and see what happens from that point of view, to see how the ivory tower establishment is going to continue to make money off buyers, because they're probably very, very disappointed in the way the web has made it more easy for artists to get more money for themselves. So, am I a cynic?
Well, yeah, well, I agree with you. I agree with Pete there. I've got a dear friend in SigCup called Ron Truman Border. And hello, Ron, if you're listening. And Ron's been doing the pub and club, the folk club and pub circuit around the UK for probably the last 20 years. And he's tuned out CD after CD after CD. And he's got his own website. He's got his MySpace running. And not one record company has gone near him in all that time. And he gets gigs regularly, all up and down. He does festivals. He's worked with Ian Anderson. He's been on the same bill as Ian Anderson. All sorts of people. He's met Nick. But of course, it's the record companies. Whether he's too old or he's not in the genre that they're looking for, he's not a sniff. But he still makes ends meet by personal sales via his site. And of course, CDs on the nights of the gigs. The problem, certainly here in Australia, the problem with music is the venues are fast disappearing. The red tape insurance bullshit with, you've got to have all your paperwork in order before you actually get a gig. You can't get out there and do it. I spoke to Ron about it last time I was over, and he said, "Oh no, I can go into a pub and do a gig and get paid cash and wander out." I said, "Well, you can't do that in Australia. You need public liability. You've got to have your leads tagged and tested so you don't blow each other up, and all these hurdles are in front of budding musos, And there isn't really the folk club circuit that there is in the UK, and it's pretty difficult over there to actually get a head start. I think it's come down to sort of playing little tiny restaurants and cafes and things like that, where you wander in with one acoustic guitar and no amplification and just sit there, much like Greenwich Village would have been, I suppose.
Well, that's right.
Maybe it's all going, turning full circle, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, certainly there's a proliferation of acoustic acts these days.
Absolutely.
It seems that wherever you look, there's somebody playing an acoustic guitar and singing.
Yep.
I've been buying a fair amount of music, actually, from a website in the UK over the last year or two called Woven Wheat Whispers. I don't know if you two have come across it, but it's basically it's a digital distribution company, if you like, and it will basically take somebody's self-recorded album or whatever and will make it available for people to buy, and they'll take a cut, of course, but it's not the same model as the old record companies. And for a musician that doesn't have the wherewithal or the time to fiddle about with MySpace and setting up websites, etc., this is another option, and it's a not evil record company, if you like. And I like that kind of thing. There's another one called Magnatune that's got the same kind of approach in the US, and there's a good revenue sharing and promotional thing going on there without any of the crap that EMI and Sony and whoever else wants to sue me go through. So maybe that's where things will go, I don't know. But interesting what you were saying about live music, because I still think that's at the very core of musical appreciation.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Well, maybe it's all going to go back to the small bars. Maybe it's going to be. Cafe societies are fine, and wine bars here, they're fine too.
Yeah.
If it's got to be that way, well, let's go back.
There's a push on at the moment in Sydney to actually create some choice, whereby the pretty much crap pubs that we have here will will be one area where people can go, and they're trying to establish these, as they call them, hole-in-the-wall bars. A smaller place where you're not necessarily confronted with a massive television screens, and where it seems wherever you go in Australia, there's half a dozen TV screens on.
Oh, it bugs the hell out of me, yeah.
And
yeah,
the sound's turned down, and they've got a music system that's turned up, or worse still, the radio. And radio seems to be uniformly crap everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Anywhere in the world is awful. It's awful in Britain, and it's awful in Australia.
Mm.
And they're trying to actually do something. One of the Sydney Lord Mayor, in fact, is trying to get a push together to make some smaller venues, which would be good.
Where yeah, it would.
Actually go for a quiet drink and sit down and talk if you want to. So, yeah, things could be happening.
Okay. We've got your phone ringing in the background there. It's good to hear that Australia's got the English-style ringtone there.
So. Oh, yes, it's a classic ring, that one.
Yeah. It's only going to ring about three times more than I can go with the voicemail.
Well, we're kind of at the end. We've had a good old rabbit on here, but I think
it's been great fun.
I mean, have you got any closing words or any comments you want to make, or any great pronouncements you want to make? Or
I pronounce the podcast a big hit, Paul. They're really, really good. And I know you've been unsure about how they've been received. People that I know have listened to them, really liked them.
Oh, good. Well, it seems like the sort of ultimate vanity thing when you start doing it, but you know, it's
yes,
fun.
Yeah, congratulations, Paul. Yeah, keep it up. We're certainly enjoying it down here anyway.
Oh, great. All right, well, with that, I think we'll bid you goodbye. Maybe we'll talk to you again at some point in the future, and I hope to meet the pair of you in person again, either in Ireland or down under. Who knows?
Yeah, let's hope so.
Indeed, Paul. Thanks a lot.
We should talk a bit about the new Stormcock too later on.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Take care, Paul.
Bye for now.
Thanks, Paul. Bye now.
Bye.
Well, thanks a lot, Pete and Steve, for the interview. I really enjoyed conducting that, and I know that I got a lot of good feedback from the first part saying what a great pair of interviewees you two were. So I hope people enjoyed the second part just as well. And as we said, we'll try and catch up with each other again sometime next year for another chat, I hope. Next up, another music track, and I've picked a track from the currently and probably forever unavailable Loony on the Bus album. This was a collection of previously unreleased and rare tracks, but also included a bunch of tracks from Commercial Breaks, which was an album that Roy recorded with EMI after Bullen and Ming Vars, but it never actually got released due to various wranglings with the record company and so on. Now, Roy did actually end up releasing Commercial Breaks as a album in its own right, although that is also currently unavailable, and there's a note on his site that says there are no current plans to reissue it. Anyway, one of the tracks on Loony on the Bus was something called Burn the World Part 1. Now, Burn the World was a 20-minute or so long track that Roy wrote, and it was intended to be part of Descendants of Smith, an album he did when he returned to EMI. However, it was deemed to be far too long and far too uncommercial, although, as Roy says on the live version of Burn the World, well, Burning the World really won't be that commercial, will it now? Burn the World Part 1 was a bit of an oddity as far as I'm concerned. I don't really know the heritage of it because it's not part of the actual Burn the World track. It's a kind of separate thing in its own right, although it has some of the same themes. I really like it. It's quite raw and it's a very sort of passionate song. Mindless decision. That was Burn the World from Looney on the Bus. Okay, next up is the A to Z of Harper. We've gone on to D now, since this is the fourth podcast. And for D, I've chosen an album title this time. It's Death or Glory. Now, Death or Glory was an album that came out of a fairly messy breakup. Roy had been with Jackie for a number of years, and eventually they split. Now, this is a very difficult thing to talk about, and I was, you know, in two minds about whether to go into a lot of detail here, because, you know, Roy's private life is his private life. But he made this record all about the experiences, and he really bared his soul on the record and laid it all out. And as a result, it's one of those records that if you've ever had experience the breakup of a long-term relationship, it rings so many bells, and it's very cathartic to listen to. And I'm absolutely certain that the album has helped a lot of people through some pretty tough times and helped them to come to terms with things that they've been experiencing. Roy was very brave to put this out. And there are two versions out there. The first one, the initial release, had some very raw and heartfelt poetry on there as well as the music. And later on, he came back and re-examined the record and took out some of the more raw stuff, tidied things up a little bit. Now, it has been suggested to me that I put one or two of the original poems on there, but I've decided not to do that. I think it's best to sort of leave things as they are, and I think the version of the album that's out there now is the version that should be out there now. I remember going to see Roy play at the Bloomsbury Theatre in London soon after the release of this album. It might even have been before the actual release. I can't quite remember now. And at that time, he'd split with Jackie, but she was still doing the sound at the gigs, and that must have been a terrifically difficult situation. And I remember the poor guy had a nosebleed before he came on stage, and the nosebleed wouldn't stop, and the gig had to be cancelled. And I saw him being led away by Jackie with her arm around him, and one of those emotional moments. I knew what he was going through, and everybody's heart was with him, I think, that night. As it turned out, a bunch of us ended up going down the pub instead. You know how these things go. And anyway, a lot of water has passed under the bridge since then, but this really is an amazing album. It's extremely emotional and extremely raw. But what I've chosen is one of the more pastoral but still sad songs on there. It's called On Summer Day.
I thought I saw a swallow land upon my hand on the summer day. I thought I saw my true love standing in the sand on one old May Day. I thought I heard the dolphins sing, you gotta bring her back on summer day. See her run along the tide line where the trade winds blow. Feel the breath of summer in her. Underneath the shooting stars I wished, and would you know, I thought I saw a swallow land upon my head on summer day. Da 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 da. On the summer day, the light has come to play. Steals across the misty sky, and by and by she'll maybe stay. Can there ever be again another spring? Will the birds forever hold us?
What a lovely track that is. Okay, next we have some listener feedback. And once again, I've had a phone call. Fantastic.
Paul, old boy, Pete Fincham, Watford Pete. Just got a little bit of feedback for you. Mate, fantastic, fantastic podcast. And it's great to have finished off the last one with a wonderful rendition of Me and My Woman from the Festival Hall. Brought back some cracking memories of a wonderful weekend back in 2001, starting off in the Covent Garden gig and all the fun and games that went through the Sunday. It's a great memory. Keep it up, and hopefully we'll have a proper gathering at some point soon. And we can celebrate maybe Roy's 65th, which is just gone, but we can do it a year late. So, have a nice one, mate. Take care.
Cheers, Pete. I really appreciate the feedback. The Royal Festival Hall weekend was really something, actually. A whole bunch of us ended up staying at a hotel in London that Darren Crisp sorted out for us, if I remember rightly. And on the Saturday night, we had a sort of Stormcock gathering in a sort of basement of a place in Covent Garden. But we also had a full PA in there. And various people on the mailing list that had a sort of musical ability actually played a live gig. It was really quite a fun evening. Despite the fact the power got cut off and we had candles around the place, which probably added to the ambience, really a lot of fun. And then on the Sunday, of course, we had Roy's RFH gig, which I played a track from last time. I can kind of just about remember actually being ending up in Pete's hotel room at the end of the night, along with Jont, who is a very skilled musician in his own right, and one or two other folks. And somebody saw a little plastic bottle that was allegedly full of ginger ale and picked it up and had a quick swig because they were getting really thirsty, but it turned out that it was full of scotch. I think Peter decided to smuggle some scotch into the gig or something and hadn't drunk it. So there was much choking and hilarity ensued in that kind of drunken way that these things happen. Anyway, thanks a lot, Pete. Apart from Pete's audio feedback, I had some various comments on the podcast. Everybody likes it. People were pretty pleased to hear Goodbye Lady Bird, which I played off my vinyl single. So I'm hoping to sort of dig out a couple of other less common pieces, much like I've done in this podcast. But if you've got any particular requests for stuff that you think people would like to hear, you think it's maybe rare or that people have missed it, let me know and let's see what we can sort out. If you want to leave a voicemail, which I'll play on the programme, you may mail me an MP3 or you can just send me a plain message. And if you want me to read it out, let me know. It's podcast@stormcock.net. Or if you want to, you can use a plain old telephone and call me on 020-8816-7706. Or if you're not in the UK, it's country code 44208816-7706. Thanks a lot. Okay, next. Well, I have another track for you to play, and I've decided to go for something with a more wintry theme, and I was thinking about it a bit, and then thought, well, you know, I haven't really talked at all yet about Descendants of Smith, or Garden of Uranium, as the album's now called, and there's a track on there called Still Life, which was a sort of musical departure for Roy, I think. So, something off the beaten track a little bit, Still Life.
Jackdaw watches sunset. From the telegraph pole, at 5 to 3 in yellow light, as black as shiny coal. Frozen still, except for 500,000 eyes that wander to the thrill. Still. Fading primrose turns to pink. Shadows play dark hand. To mark a place he floated when he knew he could. Perfect impression of a wing beat in the snow. Still alive. Still.
Reaching the end of the podcast now. First of all, the legal stuff. The opening music is courtesy of Adam Leonard. You can find more about him at myspace.com/realwoodrecords. The rest of the music in the podcast is by kind permission of Roy Harper and Science Friction Limited. Thank you again, Roy, for your continuing permission for me to play this stuff. I really appreciate it. Links for all your Roy Harper needs, www.royharper.com. And for my site, www.stormcock.net, all about Roy and Nick Harper, a collection of articles and forums and fan-related gubbins, all sorts of stuff there if you're interested in looking into it further. This month I also brought out a Nick Harper special podcast, which some of you will have already heard. Nick is one of Roy's sons and is an incredibly talented musician, and I thought it'd be quite fun to do a special podcast all about Nick, and I was fortunate enough to be able to get an interview with Nick himself, and I think that turned out pretty well. So I suggest you give that a listen from the same source that you got this podcast if you haven't heard it already. Now, how can you help the podcast? Well, I had a look on the iTunes music store recently. This podcast is on there and you can subscribe to it from iTunes and get every edition as it's published. There is also a listener feedback thing. You can actually review podcasts on there, give some comments about what you like about it, etc. Nobody's done that for this podcast yet, and I felt it would be a bit wrong for me to review my own podcast. So if you use iTunes to get this and you fancy writing a couple of lines of review, please go ahead. You don't have to be particularly sycophantic. Be honest, really. The other thing you can do is if you've got tons of spare cash, which I doubt that you have, but if you have, there is a PayPal donation link on stormcock.net, and any money you put there will go towards the cost of the hosting of the podcast and the microphone mixer and all that kind of stuff to just keep things ticking over. Okay, this podcast is issued under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives Works 2.0 UK England and Wales license. Which basically means I don't mind who you give it to. You can't change it, though, or claim it's your own work. And please don't take the music from the podcast and use it elsewhere. The final track for this podcast is going to be Evening Star from Death or Glory. I'm recording this on the Friday night just before the Led Zeppelin reunion concert on Monday night at the O2 Arena. I don't have a ticket. I'm going to be very curious to know how it works out. But that reminded me that Roy had written this particular track for playing at Robert Plant's daughter's wedding a few years back. So I thought it was a fairly appropriate number to finish on, and it's a really lovely song. So that's it for this month. I'll see you in January 2008. In the meantime, have a fantastic holiday season. Don't get too cold, and see you next time. Bye for now.
There's a lady who knows, you know. All the to's and the fro's they go. When they're chained in their minds, as the passion unwinds. Thank you. but she knows as she watches over the evening star. That they'll all be together no matter where they all are. Oh, oh, yeah, yeah.
So we're getting away from football, we're getting away from angling. Let's get to my old favourites, the rock and roll stuff in there.
Yeah.
You came in and you were very excited that Roy Harper had been through here at one point. You said that's something.
Because I'm writing, I've just written a book called Bearded Tit, which is my autobiography.
Yeah.
And about...
Yeah.
And Stormcock.
Yeah, of course,
which
yeah.
is that's Roy it. Harper's famous... Stormcock is the name for a...
Oh, come on, will you...
Join the queue, Rory.
Yeah, exactly. It's getting thin there, Rory. Okay. Come on, so you go on what?
Stormcock by Roy Harper is, of course... Yeah. Stormcock is the name for a missile thrush.
Yeah.
Which is...
Is that what it is?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
The missile thrush sings through any storm.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, you'll know because I think because you are fucking.
Well, no, that's that.
Did I do that? Sorry. You are a. Sorry. You are.